Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
Let me tell you what. When you're looking for a spokesman with his finger on the pulse of the South, you come to me.
Get the guy from
Detroit. Thompson, get the hell out of here.
Pete Thamel.
Randy Edsel definitely has a pouchy cup bonus already written in.
Randy Edsel.
And SI's Pat 40.
Maybe I'll be 74 and say, no, I want to still write a column for the weekly neighborhood paper. I don't know, but
just as long as I don't have to read it.
And here's Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. July 4th, just after the 4th. Hope everyone had a good one. This is our SEC preview podcast. That's right. SEC, just a little operation down south. Play a little ball.
A little mom and pop league.
Little ball. Who's playing ball? Who's the ball coach? Before we get to that, though, I have to bring this up. This is the single most painful quote I've ever read coming out of Washington, D.C.
Oh, boy.
I don't know if you saw this. I mean, I understand there's context, but just reading it, I felt dead inside. Dr. Anthony Fauci.
Mm-hmm.
I'm familiar with his work.
Slightly.
If I see that guy, we're going to fight. Quote, bars. Really not good. Really not good. Congregation at a bar inside is bad news. We really have got to stop that.
Uh-oh.
Period. End quote. Now, I understand there's a pandemic, but I don't even like such things being voiced.
Maybe you should move to Arizona, Dan.
Dan,
he could have added until the pandemic is over. Don't just make a blanket statement like this. It's going to be misconstrued by future generations.
We found the one way to trigger Dan.
I am triggered. Cable news. I am rarely insulted. Yeah. I'm going to cancel Fauci's bar comment. Cancel culture.
You can get on a conference call with some OAN reporters. They would probably agree with your Fauci. Yeah.
So does that mean, are we canceling the Fauci Cup if you're that mad at Fauci?
No. Okay. He's trying to keep us safe.
Who invented the bar? Was that Dan or Pat? Whose line was that?
Pat.
I
think
Fauci, that was Fauci Cup. I gave it's Dan credit for it. God, the last thing Dan needs is more credit.
Be an accurate reporter, Pete.
Yeah, I will. There will be a correction. We will do a correction on Twitter tomorrow. I will follow.
No.
Yeah, trust Pat but Fowler verify. I should have trusted that Dan wasn't that clever.
Bars, yeah, for those who weren't listening, the Fauci Cup, that's our term for the winners of the most positive tests so far. Which football teams have the most? Do we think Clemson is now in the lead over LSU?
It was in the lead. I don't know if they still have their lead. We're going to have to check that.
Yeah.
The Fauci Cup. Get your herd immunity early. Get it over with. This is my original thought. I really still feel like I was the winner on that. But anyway, there's going to be plenty of SEC schools, SEC speed, including catching infectious diseases.
So I'm going to interrupt you for a second, Dan. So Henry Bushnell and I are working on a story this week about that very notion, like herd immunity and is it positive, whatever. And there was a Pac-12 conference call webinar or whatever on Friday where they brought in like a dozen infectious disease specialists from all the schools, and they had coaches and ADs on to like chat it up about like ask any questions, where are we with the virus, coming back, whatever. And so anonymously, someone in the Pac-12, be it a coach or an AD, said to the experts, hey, like, isn't this the best strategy? Like, everybody goes and gets the virus, then we can go play and not have to worry about it. And I was told it was met with like awkward silence, like nobody wanted to be the one to answer. It's like every single expert on there just completely but politely eviscerated that notion over and over and over and over, including bringing up, which I didn't know, but I Googled that, for Rudy Gobert, you know, the famous NBA player who in March sort of was, the domino that ended sports as we know it. He still doesn't have taste. Like, he's still feeling after effects. Yes. And
he's athlete zero.
Yeah, he is athlete. He is athlete zero. And the big worry amongst the experts among young athletes is that it can impact your lung capacity. And lung capacity, obviously, I don't have to talk to the swimmer sire, Pat 40 here, and, Dan has extra room in his lungs to hold his Bush Light when he golfs. So, like, both of you.
It's very strenuous.
Yes. No, both of you know how important lung capacity. So, anyway, I thought that was germane to the Fauci Cup. I don't want people to think we were actually advocating for Dan's hypothetical. Well, I'm not advocating for it. Dan can all he wants.
I'm saying it's a strategy.
Boomer Esiason must listen to the show, by the way. He was throwing that out there. He thinks that some people are doing that. He was theorizing that.
Let me tell you something. Everyone's stealing from this show.
Yeah, that's true.
What are you going to do, Boomer Esiason?
Good point. Trendsetters, you have to deal with that.
We're more of a think tank, really.
Right.
Influencers.
We're going to have Middle East peace done after we get rid of this pandemic. So stay tuned.
We should have like 50 million TikTok subscribers by now. I mean, I don't. This kind of influence.
The notion of you two doing a TikTok together, by the way.
Where's our TikTok?
Have you done any with your daughter, Stan?
No. Kidding me? I do it with Charlie D'Amelio. That's it. Only the big timers. I'm not doing one with my daughters. They don't have any followers.
I'm pretty sure, Clayton. I just checked with my daughter who's sitting right here, and she does not have TikTok. I don't believe
she's
my son.
She's too old for TikTok.
Yeah,
she's a college junior.
Right.
College juniors are too old.
Yeah.
TikTok is the language of the young. One of them described it was funny. They described Twitter as TikTok with words. If you want to date yourself. That's how somebody, I don't know who it was, someone described Twitter. So you want the generational divide of America. It. There you are.
So this would be an artifact, the actual newspaper?
Who knows? Yeah. Oh, the newspaper? What is that?
That's a Dead Sea Scroll right there.
77 years ago, the Patriots signed Cam Newton.
All right. So SEC is our conference. We're a little disappointed. We have a college football podcast, and they were supposed to have the first media days, as they always do. I think we even discussed it one glorious time when it was a possibility we would all go and meet up at the SEC media days and do the podcast live in the Hoover Mall or something. Are they still at the mall?
Yeah. The Galleria there, the Birmingham Galleria.
Nope. Do it in the food court, by the Orange Julius or something.
I love Orange Julius.
Of course you do.
It's not that healthy, but I like it.
We would have started a Popeye's Chick-fil-A just war down there.
Oh, man.
This was back when America had simpler problems. Remember when we used to debate that in this country?
Yeah.
We were worried about the chicken wars dividing us. Jeez.
Now it's God.
Yeah, now, those were better times, man. Better
fight
times.
Over anything. Anyway, they're not doing it. Not only are they not doing it live, they're going to do a virtual media day. And somehow they canceled that. How do you cancel a virtual media day?
Yeah.
They had one big Zoom, and they just sent an email and said your calendar's been changed.
I'm too busy. We don't have time. I used to hate SEC media days. Some of the coaches, Urban Meyer, did I say that out loud? Would go to SEC media day and then run through the place, including the like radio row of all these poor guys that are down there, their radio shows trying to get interviews. I'm too busy. I got a plane to catch. It's called media day. Sit down and talk to the poor guy.
No kidding.
Rolled in from Dothan. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jerry and the Gator on Monroe Radio. Just give him 7 minutes, man. Come on. Too busy. It's media day. What are you doing? This is the media.
That should be the one time we get a little respect, by golly. It was great. Jerry Tipton, who's covered Kentucky basketball since the earth cooled a couple of years ago, was trying to ask Calipari some question. Calipari wasn't answering them, and Tipton said, "Today is media day. It's not coach day. It's media day. We get to ask the questions we want to ask." I thought that was great.
That's vintage salty Jerry Tipton right there.
Yeah. I wasn't expecting to have to talk to the local sports radio, except I'm walking down Radio Row at media day. It's July 8th, coach. What are you doing?
Sit down with Jerry and the Gator.
I mean, one of the great things about the SEC is there's all these radio shows like Jerry and the Gator.
Right.
They're just everywhere talking SEC football all the time. This is why you make, you know, $11 million a year, whatever you're getting paid. Just throw them a bone, man. These poor guys are like, coach, yeah. Please.
Just Dan still actually goes on that show to talk about death of the BCS because they actually haven't realized in Monroe there's a playoff yet. So Dan still gets some royalties. He can squeeze a couple cases of Bush Light out of his royalties from Jerry the Gator.
So I had a PR, the publisher of Death to the BCS, the PR professional, this woman, booked all these things. I did 289 radio shows.
Did you really?
On Death to the BCS. No
joke. Holy moly.
Wow.
Every day was media day when I'm selling a book, baby. By the way, you could buy the Epic Athletes collection. It's great for your children during the summer vacation.
Gator really liked the Steph Curry one, right?
Steph Curry's really good. Tom Brady, yeah. Patrick Mahomes coming out soon. Yeah. Mm. Simone Biles. Yeah, you go check it out. Yeah, it's right there on the Amazon.
That should they just bought yourself another case of Bush Light right there.
I mean, somebody's got to pay for this thing. I'm not asking for a lot. I'm looking for 30 beers for $16.99, and I think you guys can help. Come on, people. Anyway, that media day was great, though, when they had it, real or virtual. The crowd of autograph people in the lobby of that hotel, why it was in suburban Birmingham, never made a whole lot of sense. That media capital of the world. But that added to the charm. There was more houndstooth sold in that mall.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. And the Bama store. Yeah, like you come out of the, you're in the upper level where Radio Row is, and you come out of the little tunnel, and right there is the Bama store. And there used to be an Auburn store there, too. I'm not sure that that one's still there, but, I mean, it was like, boom. If you get through the Radio Row gauntlet, the first thing you see after that is Houndstooth Central. And that's where you know you are at Media Days.
Can I make a confession?
You bought some houndstooth?
No, I've never been to SEC Media Days.
What?
You know why? They're a complete waste of time with terrible access.
They are. It's a spectacle.
No, it's a total spectacle and it's a total scene. And so many people wrote the scene of SEC Media Days that almost became like a mockery. But forget that. Especially, I texted Sankey when he moved it to the week after July 4th. I was like, have fun, man. You're never seeing me there again. Like, remember when the SEC started getting its NFL calendar overreach?
Oh, yeah.
And like, Yeah. Like, I live in Massachusetts. We got like 3 weeks, good weeks to go on vacation a year here. All right. I'm not going to fly to Birmingham for 4 days to wait around for the Vanderbilt coach. Like in the middle of July when, again, certain parts of America, obviously we do a twice weekly college football podcast. I just like, and no place I ever worked really ever like got on me about going. So I would just go to the ones where you can actually talk to the coaches. Like that was my, you know, it's not, they televised the thing. There's nothing more useless than a televised media day. If you have to go spend 3 nights in a hotel in Alabama, doesn't make any sense. So I've that's been my silent protest. If you're gonna have your media day that early in July and you're gonna make it that long and that much of a spectacle, you can do without me. And you know what? They've done just fine without me. I'm not saying that, but
They're not going on. They're not pushing it back this year on your account. We know that.
Correct. But nope. There's no.
But I mean, is the access that much better at the Big Ten media day?
You can.
How does he know? How does he know?
Yeah, he doesn't know. He hadn't been. Forget it.
No, some of us appreciate
it. You just said you've never been to SEC Media Days.
I've been to all the other media days at least 3 or 4 times.
If you've never been to the SEC, you can't compare it. You cannot compare it.
You are prejudiced against SEC Media Day.
Yes.
I am. I'll admit it.
Biased.
I am. I've been told over and over how terrible the access is because it's just what Dan said. The coaches fly in, get there 7 minutes before, and they leave right after. So there's just little time to actually, like, I would. Now, do I go through SEC towns and campuses in the preseason to see the coaches and players? Absolutely. I just think it's a more efficient use of time. So I've never been to SEC Media Days, and my career goal is to never go.
First off, you can absolutely talk to coaches. It's just the Vanderbilt coach, whoever's an interim coach, and occasionally someone who's like hanging on for their job. The good coaches, no. You're not allowed to talk to them at media day.
I did have a long sit down with Hugh Freeze in the category of coaches who are hanging on to their jobs.
Yeah, they get friendly.
I'm sure that was pleasant. I'm sure he was delighted to see you.
He asked for the meeting.
Well, okay, I've always wondered, it is a slice of something. I mean, some of us some of us appreciate you know, a couple days in 98 degree humidity, food courts at a bad mall, and the charms of a South Birmingham suburb.
Little Hoover goes a long way. Believe it now, Birmingham is an underrated food town. There's some good places to eat there.
I like Birmingham. Birmingham's a good town.
You can get some good meals at in July.
Let every state have a Birmingham, right? That's the song lyric. All right, but I always wondered, because there are crazy people at this, and there's too much houndstooth, and there's all this mayhem. I just, not that it's probably likely that someone would just show up from another country and find themselves to whatever that hotel is in Hoover.
The Winfrey.
But like, if one just wandered through, like you're just like some Japanese businessman or German businessman, and you just happen to be staying at this place, and you walk in and you go, what in the ever living is this? This woman is head to toe in houndstooth, screaming for Coach Saban to come down the escalator and sign her baby's head.
Yeah, that's it. The lobby crowd is something you do not get anywhere else. And that's why the SEC is what it is. Is you just get this crazy slice of fandom down there that is hilarious and disturbing at the same time. There's Auburn will bring its people, and then, you know, some Tennessee, there'll be a few, Florida will be a few, Georgia will be a few, maybe, you know, a Kentucky basketball fan gets lost and ends up there. But when it's Bama Day, oh my goodness, it's unbelievable.
Well, if I want a Star Wars bar, I'll just watch Star Wars.
I haven't been to, I will confess, I'm more on Pete's side. I haven't been in a long time. The last time was Urban Meyer walking through Radio Row, literally just ignoring the calls from every single poor guy who's convinced his program director this was a worthy use of station money.
See, this is where I have to confess to the Jedi mind tricks I had played on Pat when we worked together at Yahoo. I'd be like, man, Pat, you really, I mean, I don't think I can handle SEC Media Day. It's too big of a stage for me. You should you know, there's so many big issues there. You should really go tackle it.
That's always been self-effacing, Pete, to say that. Yes, no doubt about it. It's too big for me.
Yeah. I mean, you live in that footprint. You have such a better feel for those programs and coaches. And then I'll be like, yeah, look forward to reading your column when I get home from the beach.
Hey, it's 2 days too long, but it's pretty worthwhile to be there, in my opinion. First of all, you got 14 schools all there at one time. If I don't want to take a week driving through the South, then I've got all of them right there in 2 days. So now four days is too many. Usually I'm out after three. The fourth day, you're going to get like one worthwhile coach, and then that's where we're going to throw in Vandy or Kentucky when Kentucky's 3-9 or the new coach at Arkansas. Yeah.
All right. Well, let me just say this. State of the conference.
Yeah. State of the conference.
Because that's what we're supposed to be doing here.
Oh, yeah. I forgot.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say really, really good. Your
bold
thoughts, gentlemen.
Hot take.
Right the there. SEC is good at football. My take, my column.
So if they could just envelop Clemson, they could break away. They could probably secede from America, actually, if they got Clemson in the SEC at this point. They're look, it's pretty clear who the top league is, and the SEC really had that push when the Mississippi schools got really good there, when it was like top to the bottom really good. How good is it? We're you know, zits on the Mona Lisa right now, right? But like, how good is it top to bottom right now? I don't know if it's at places where it's been in the last decade, but certainly, like, I mean, Alabama has a 3-loss season and it's like an apocalypse, right? Auburn is, you know, was as good last season under Gus really as it has been other than the year that they went to the title. Florida is back resembling Florida again. Georgia is clearly being maximized or closer to maximized under Kirby Smart than it was under Mark Richt. The Mississippi schools are interesting, but they're not going to be that good for a while, although at least Ole Miss has a little momentum with the quarterback. LSU just won the title, and they're like the fifth program I've mentioned. So yeah, I think right now, I mean, these are the glory days of the SEC, and they're continuing with just mild fluctuations of their greatness.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It added another layer, I think, to the league's dominance to have LSU win a title, because for a while there, and justifiably so, people had said, well, it's Bama, and then it's everybody else. LSU just went 15-0 and trampled everyone. One of the more impressive seasons we've seen. So it's not just Alabama and everyone else. Now it's LSU. Auburn has won a title a decade ago, had played for another one. Georgia played in a championship game against Alabama. So you've got four teams right there that have at least have played in a championship game in the last decade or less, that in the playoff era, right? Nobody else has that.
I think half the league has a rightful idea that they can win a national championship.
Right.
And So Alabama, obviously, Auburn. Now, I'm not talking about this year. I mean, if you get your crap together, Alabama, Auburn, LSU, for sure. Florida has done it. Georgia. And I'm going to say Tennessee still. I think Tennessee could. There you go, Sully. There's your bone. I think Tennessee can get that momentum if it gets the right coach and the right thing. And I think A&M can.
Yeah.
I think those seven could win national champions, could be a national championship, and you wouldn't be stunned. Now, let me just say this, if you're on the other side, maybe you're in Arkansas, or maybe you're South Carolina, whatever school you're going. If I had made this list 10 years ago, I wouldn't have put Clemson on a list of saying they can win a national championship. So anything's possible. But I think at any of those seven schools, when you're hiring a coach or you're looking at what is our ceiling, you're saying, yeah, we should win we can win a national championship. I think if you're at Kentucky or you're at Vanderbilt or, certainly the other leagues, Purdue, you're not sitting there saying, well, we should win a national title. Let's get to 10-2 sometimes and things like that. No other conference has half the league with a legit shot. And let me put it this way. Not all this year, but it's not out of the question that four or five a year don't go in thinking they can win it.
Yeah. And including, I don't know, this year that might be too many, but look, Alabama is going to be very, very good, shockingly. Georgia is going to be very, very good. Florida, very good. LSU lost a lot, but they've been recruiting like monsters. A&M has the talent, could make a push up. Auburn has a second year with Bo Nix at quarterback. So, right there, six of your seven. Sorry, Sully, I'm not going to throw Tennessee into that mix yet. But six of your seven, I think six of those seven could make be in the top 15, and some of them are going to be higher than that. And a couple of them maybe in the top five.
Last of recent years, the average eight teams a year in the top 25 of recruiting.
Yeah.
Most years over the last 5 years. So, and look, NFL draft picks, 63 from the SEC. That was 15 more than the Big Ten, and nearly twice as many as the Pac-12. Total dominance, money, they got it. Fans, they got it. Controlling of their market. I mean, I just think the SEC at this point has become, it's almost like the soundtrack of the South. Like, I don't think there's anything else in college sports that dominates a region. I think back in the day, maybe you had like Tobacco Road basketball, or maybe there's some, some hockey league in the North Dakota or something. I don't know. But like, I was doing something on NASCAR, and I was talking to a guy about NASCAR. It was about why isn't NASCAR as popular? And I literally think back in the day, everyone had a favorite driver, and the drivers were these soap opera stars. Like that, there were rivalries, and you knew this guy was like this, and this guy had a nickname. I think the SEC coaches told all that.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh, hey, we got Lane Kiffin back, got characters like that.
Coach O.
Right, Coach O. These are just authentic characters.
Yep.
And they're roaming around, whether they're winning or not. Everyone's got an opinion. All the coaches, or most of them. And it goes back and forth. And I just think they, like, the SEC stole NASCAR's act.
That is a good point. That is.
Have you written that column, Dan? That's a good column.
Let me tell you what. When you're looking for a spokesman with this finger on the pulse of the South, you come to me.
Get the guy from
Detroit.
Wright
Thompson, get the hell out of here. Yeah.
That rant was brought to you by Tailgate Guys. When I go to Alabama LSU, I use Tailgate Guys.
Let me tell you about the Tailgate Guys. If those guys would even give me a 10% discount, I'd be all singing their praises on here. And you could still refund, No, man, those poor guys. Jeez. Yeah. How about that business, man?
Oh,
you're the tailgate guys. Man. You set up tents at Alabama. You're like, this business will never, ever die.
Oh, yeah. And now, yeah.
Ugh, how about I feel that? So bad.
A year later, they may die.
Yeah. So I don't want my money back.
Massive storage bills, right? If you're the tailgate guys, you just have massive storage bills.
Yeah.
And they're piling up, and you got, oh, man, they feel awful for that.
They're bad for all of these people.
You know, I would think like the tailgate guys probably would do a bonkers business at, say, graduation. Nobody had a graduation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, stuff like that, too. They've been getting
They're not just at Alabama. They're at
everything. I know. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Nobody had
a graduation. Really was great.
Yeah,
there were no graduations.
They crush it in SEC baseball, too.
Oh, yeah. Sure. LSU, Mississippi State, places like that.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
For those who missed, I went with a bunch of my friends for a bachelor party of a guy who still hasn't gotten actually married.
My
LSU Alabama game last year, and I paid like $650 for a tent. And it was worth every damn penny. And a table and a bag of ice. I think you got a bag of ice and a cooler, a table, and a tent. That was it. Maybe a chair. All right, let's get to the contenders this year. I don't know. What as you go into this, how about this? Let's do this. The king of the league is Nick Saban. He has, I think, I wouldn't say he transformed the league, but he certainly has defined the league in a lot of ways. His assistants are all over the league. He built up LSU. Then he left. I don't know if LSU's LSU right now without Saban. Then he builds up Alabama that had been treading water for a while. And now you've got his assistants are where? Everywhere they're at
Georgia.
Georgia, Tennessee.
Tennessee.
South Carolina.
South Carolina. Texas A&M. Ole Miss.
Can Pittman ever have a cup of coffee with Nick?
He worked everywhere, man.
He's worked everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know. So. Anyway, since Bear Bryant, this is the biggest figure. I mean, I think Steve Spurrier obviously is a huge figure in the league and changing from when they used to play 6-3 games. Lots of good tackling. Good tackling between the tackles.
That's right.
Ball coach changed the game. But I think Nick Saban's the icon, man. He's the king.
Yep.
He's 68. Going to be 69 in the fall. So I sorry to do this, Alabama fans. He's going to take the Giants job this time. No, I'm only kidding.
Nah.
He almost did take the Giants job once.
He almost did take the Giants job. They always say, he ain't even looking.
Yeah.
He's looking.
It was a long time ago.
He's kicked some tires.
Yeah. I might have been like when Coughlin got it. I mean, it was a long time. It might have been before Coughlin. It might have been Jim Fossil got it.
Being the Giants coach is a good job. Anyway, he's still there. I think he'll retire at Alabama. I thought he had his chance to move a couple years ago. Didn't. I think this is it. But how much longer does he go? 69. He looks like he's in great shape. He looks energized. His team's really good. Recruiting's great. Does he go 5 years? Does he go 2 years? Does he go 10? What do you think?
Man,
let's do some reckless speculation.
Okay, go ahead, Pete. Lead the reckless speculation.
Well, I mean, if you want reckless speculation, clearly the pandemic has been a ploy by the rest of the SEC West to get rid of Saban because his age puts him in the immunocompromised age range, right? I mean, it's a good question. He is like the joke is he's a robot and he's a cyborg. And the people who've worked with Saban, who are, you know, practically half of college football at this point and half the NFL, will tell you like they can't fathom him do anything else. I had a former Saban assistant tell me once, I've never met anyone in life who loves doing their job every day more than Nick Saban loves doing his job. Like there is just a genuine passion. Like, I've coaches all the time be like, man, when I'm done with this, when I'm done with that. No, Nick Saban, and he kind of has it rolling right now. I mean, with these staffs, the size that they are, the recruiting staffs, I mean, he's got how many former head coaches and analysts right now? Mike Stoops, Butch Jones, Charlie Strong, Major Applewhite. So like four pretty functional head coaches at the end of the day. Sully, don't chime in here. Fairly functional head
coaches.
Maybe
functional at Cincinnati.
Yeah. There you go. As you know, on staff being paid, like, you know, you can do this job longer now because the staffs are so much bigger. So I would set the over under on remaining Nick Saban years at 5.5.
Yeah, that's a long time. That you're setting that as the over under. I'll take the under just because, and maybe this is almost like, I don't know. I don't even want to see guys most, but like if you're 74, stop. Maybe I'll be 74 and say, no, I want to still write a column for the weekly neighborhood paper. I don't know, but
just as long as I don't have to read it.
Be a college football. Only? Be a college football head coach at 74. Oh, I mean, Krzyzewski's what, 73? So I mean, it's not, you know, it's not out of the realm. But
Saban just crossed the Bear Bryant line. Bear retired when he was 69. Okay. So he's right
and
there.
Then Bear was dead very shortly thereafter.
Yeah, yeah, see what that got
a
him.
Great coach coach age line. I was in a story on Kelvin Sampson last year. Went up to see him when they were playing UConn, and I said, "Hey, Kelvin, how old are you?" 63, or as I like to tell people, 10 years younger than Jim Boeheim.
Yeah, 5.5. I got to take the under. I don't think you'd be a good. I don't think you'd be an odds maker.
Bet on Nick Saban being human, and I'll collect money in Hoover. I'll fly to Hoover.
See you in 5.5 years at the Hoover Hotel.
Yeah.
Okay. Nope. Meet me there. I'll totally be there.
No problem doing that.
What's the record? Honestly, is it Bill Snyder?
He was 106. When he retired.
Absolutely. Snyder, and how old was Bobby Bowden? Bowden was ancient. Paterno was ancient. Joe Bob.
Paterno was 85. He died when he died. He was 85. Is probably he was done at 84 as a coach.
See, that's he coached till he's 84. Come on, you know,
it's insane. 409-136, dude. At 84. His team was 8-1 when he got fired.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Their only loss was to Alabama at home when Saban wouldn't run it up out of, like, dignity.
Yeah, yeah. No, they were winning in his later years. Like Pete said, like, he dipped for a while, and then all of a sudden they brought it back and got recruiting going. And, Pete, it might even have been that same year, or maybe it was 05. I was there when they played at Michigan State. And they won the Big Ten title. And I followed Paterno. He runs off the field. He runs on. He runs off. Not very fast, but he still did it, even in his, you know, late 70s, early 80s, whatever it was at that point. And I'm like, I run behind him. And there's a brief moment where he is in the locker room by himself, and I am standing outside the locker room looking like, what's Joe Paterno going to do? Is he going to throw a fist in the air? He just won a Big Ten title. Pulls out his handkerchief, blows his nose, and wipes his glasses. Wipes the steam off his glasses. There it is.
Quite a lead, Pat.
I'm like, okay, when you've won enough times, that's what you do.
Whatever the hell you want, I guess. Unfortunately, yeah. That's what kind of did him in. All right, let's get back to the SEC.
Yeah, back to the SEC.
So, all right, less than 5.5. Do you think Dabo Sweeney would replace Nick Saban?
I think there's still a strong tug of Alabama to him. You know, I think I'm not sure he would do it, but it would be a strong tug of the heartstrings for him, having been not only a graduate, but a native of the state who grew up loving Alabama. But do you want to be the guy that follows that guy? I mean, there's some following the guy, but that guy, he's going to, you know, Saban will leave on equal footing with Bear Bryant. I mean, he may not quite have the Southern persona that Bryant did, but in terms of achievement, he will leave on the same footing, or maybe more if he coaches 5 more years and wins 2 or 3 more titles. But I don't know whether you want to follow that guy. I would say this: Dabo looks at it, thinks really hard, and says no.
So here's this thought: we're 5-6 years from now, ACC revenues are dwindling, right? Like, they signed that 20-year TV deal, which was way too long. Dabo, if we go by my terrible odds, would be going into year 17 or 18 at Clemson. That is a long time to spend at one place. And we just saw a little bit, even with all the great success he has, Dabo hasn't had like a great last 6 weeks, you know? So I just think, like, it's hard to ask that question in vacuum. Like, if he's been there 15 plus years, and it's just you can't barely spend. I mean, how many coaches right now have been at their place more than 20 years? You know, Kirk Ferentz.
That's it. He's the longest tenured. So
yeah, and I think it's 21. And I don't know. And Fitz is close to there, maybe, but not quite. Right. So he's yeah. Less. So anyway, like, I just think that question gets reframed by time. So just to be completely contrarian, as I agreed with Pat too much on the last podcast. I want to start disagreeing more so I can be right. I think that Dabo takes a long look and does go if it's 5 years from now.
Wow, he had a bad 6 weeks to people outside Clemson, nobody in Clemson thinks he had a bad 6-6.
Yeah. What is this bad? These are the bad weeks. He's doing all right.
Yeah. I wonder if he gets a Fauci Cup bonus in his contract.
He's leading the Fauci Cup.
Randy Edsall definitely has a Fauci Cup bonus already written in.
Randy Edsall. $2,000 if I get enough guys infected with the coronavirus.
He might even have $2,000. Tiers of it. If we're first on July 1st, if we're first on August 1st.
If I make the top 10 in a single week. Oh my God.
Yeah. The old.
You can't get drop football because then we'd have to stop making Randy Edsall contract jokes, and that would be a crime.
So here we are.
I do not want New England United, Dan Wetzel's unification of UMass and UConn to happen. For I don't think we'd have the same contract malfeasance available. It would be much, much more wisely dictated.
Our podcast is so stupid that even in the middle of the SEC preview, we're talking about UMass and UConn. All right. They are the greatest punchlines going, though. I think it's all about this. Let me put this in 1978 Southern newspaper columnist jargon. What does Dabo do if Mama calls? That's what they always say. See, right? That's the lead of like the Macon Gazette or something.
Well, Cecil Hurd will still be covering them. So.
Yeah, Cecil Hurd will do. Mama called. Gotta go back to Alabama.
That's right.
I don't know. I don't know what he does. I do think that after 17 years, sometimes you want a different challenge. But by that point, he may have won 5 straight more national titles and Fauci Cups and be considered the genius. Who knows?
He could be the first $20 million coach at Alabama.
Or at Clemson, either way, if he stayed.
No, I mean, Clemson will pay him, but like Alabama has that bottomless pit of SEC money. I mean, but at that point, is Alabama making twice as much as Clemson? Like that gap is real. And that's, I'm doing back of the napkin, somewhat unresearched math there, but it's a big, big gap. And you are going to, the problem with Clemson at that point, they're going to start to feel that revenue difference from Alabama's and the Georgias and the Floridas. Like as they pull away revenue wise, that's going to get more and more real.
All right, let's do this. We're going to concede that Saban is the king of the SEC, number one coach, lifetime achievement award. Let's say Coach Saban shocks the world, and we don't want this. We love Coach Saban. He gives us plenty of material. I don't want to live in a world where he's not adjusting that Diet Coke for every week for his press conference and yelling at reporters for not taking Louisiana Monroe serious.
That's right.
A lot of good players over there.
Are we shifting from a UMass podcast to a Louisiana Monroe podcast?
I feel like we really need to have a Southern bent here, right? All right. This is why I know that NASCAR thing, because I think like a Southerner. All right.
Here we go.
So let's say Alabama is suddenly with an open job.
Yep.
And the rules are you can only hire a current SEC coach to coach the Alabama Crimson Tide, and any of the coaches would come. So don't, and it's just hypothetical, so don't at me with the
yeah. They will.
Will Muschamp really loves it over here in Columbia. Okay, whatever. Like, they gotta go.
I gotta go.
Who do you hire? What is your list of the remaining 13 coaches? Which coach would you take to coach the Crimson Tide? And we don't need, like, age shouldn't be too big of a factor. I think actually all these guys look like they could coach another, you know, 5.
Yeah, I mean, there's only one really old dude in the league.
Okay. So you're hiring based on who you think would do the best job, not sex appeal. So sorry, Sam Pittman.
Yeah.
Not age, not no. What do you got? Who's number one after that?
Should we read our lists, or should we all do one and then two and then three, four, five?
Oh, wait, maybe like a draft? Should we do a snake draft?
That's an unfair advantage to whoever gets to pick first.
No, I just say we just all pick our one slot and then discuss it. Then I'll pick our two slot and then discuss it.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, no, because we don't want to have like 10 discussions of Sam Pittman. Three discussions. You get one snake drafted. What do you mean unfair? This is a totally ridiculous hypothetical summer podcast topic.
Well, I don't want to have to make a case for like the third best guy if I'm picking last.
Now you know how all your emailers feel, Pat 40.
How did you leave Bowling Green out of the back?
I do however Pat wants to do. Pat, you get to pick first.
Yeah. All right. Now I like it.
Who do you got?
I'm picking 40. Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen first. I mean, if you can win like he did at Mississippi State, you're good. And he's got Florida going the right way. Florida will win the SEC East in the next few years. And that's even with Georgia, I think, operating at a high level. They're going to be able to beat them one of these years and be the SEC East champion. He's got, quite frankly, big enough britches to handle it. You know, he's a very confident guy. I don't think he would walk in there and say, oh, my gosh, I don't want to follow Nick. He's a quarterback guy, so he'll recruit well. That's no disrespect to some other really accomplished guys in the league, because Mullen hasn't played in a
playoff. Yes, it is. It's okay, disrespectful.
It is. Fine. It's disrespectful.
You pick Mullen over them. It's
the other guys have.
What's Mullen's record against Kirby Smart? Georgia, Florida, head-to-head, he's 0-3.
Yeah, well, he hadn't had enough players yet.
It also would allow Urban Meyer to
a smorgasbord of trouble from Jim McElwain. So.
The Urban
it's
Meyer.
Bad when you can't remember the former Florida coach's name. Not bad you don't remember. It's bad for the former Florida coach.
Urban Meyer tree sprouts in Tuscaloosa. That'd be pretty fun. All right. Dan Mullen is off the board.
Okay.
He does a great two things about him. He does a great Cousin Eddie impression. And Pat and I have a soft spot in our heart for Dan Mullen because he would often come on our old national radio show, including the time he discussed his chicken wing eating contest. Yeah, remember that one?
Right. Accomplished chicken wing eater.
I really think that's how he got. It was really the reach of our old radio show into the hearts of recruits across America that helped him. Either that or developing Doc Prescott. All right. Number two pick.
Dan Mullen, also a huge Red Sox fan, by the way, as is Ryan Day. So you could conceivably have two Red Sox fans going at it in the national title game at some point, which would only increase the wonderful insufferability of Red Sox fans. I would take Kirby Smart, and I would have taken Kirby Smart number one, in part because of that record, in part because he's been there, knows Alabama, knows what it takes to win there, knows any gray areas that may need to be entered for recruiting, and he could hire his old buddy Will Muschamp as the defensive coordinator, because Will Muschamp's on his way out. And then he would promise to not consult Will Muschamp on hiring offensive coordinators, because Will Muschamp has been historically bad at hiring offensive coordinators at both South Carolina and Florida. But I think Kirby is, how long was he there? He was there 10 plus years as an assistant coach. I feel like that is one of those big programs, a lot of tentacles. You really have to know it. And so certainly he's not as accomplished as Jimbo Fisher. He's not won a title like Ed Orgeron. He's not nearly as quirky as Mike Leach, but I would take Kirby Smart. He is the safe, obvious pick.
Did you just indicate that there may be some gray areas in recruiting at Alabama?
I
thought I might have heard that. I don't know.
Did I say that out loud? I mean, we're doing an SEC preview. If we do not acknowledge gray areas recruiting in an SEC preview, it has clearly been commissioned by Greg Sankey, who would, by the way, would even himself acknowledge gray areas in SEC recruiting.
All he's got to do is look at who's under investigation and or has been punished lately.
You ain't rubbing, you ain't racing.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, so I got two. I think that also concludes. That takes Muschamp off the board too. Pete just fired him, and do we really want to have a long Muschamp discussion?
I mean, in his defense, he's gotten himself fired.
Let's just assume you were not taking Muschamp with the
I wasn't
third pick.
Muschamp's off the board too. Double barrel shot by Pete Daymel. I mean, I thought Muschamp would have been a good 11th or 12th pick here.
Good value play.
Late round double selection. Undrafted free agent. Muschamp. All right. So I got Jimbo Fisher national title. I got and I have Ed Orgeron national title. I'm just gonna throw a little salt into this. I'm gonna throw a little spice in. I'm taking Mark Stoops.
Ooh, all right. Okay.
Done a fabulous job at the University of Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
University of Kentucky had nothing going for it. They're pretty damn good, and I think they're going to be very good this year. Steady, bang it out. Used to be at Florida State. Recruit the South, recruit the Midwest. He could bring in all sorts of Stoops brothers to be assistant coaches.
Stoops-only staff. All right.
Stoops everywhere. Bob Stoops. What was the other Stoops? Who's
Mike Stoops.
Mike Stoops. Cooper Stoops.
No, there's a brother. There is a brother in Youngstown who is the coach. He was the defensive coordinator of Cardinal Mooney.
Okay, got that. Maybe make Cooper Manning so you get his kid. quarterback.
Yeah, that's a good idea, actually.
Bring Peyton, just make Archie the coach.
Better than
anyway,
Cooper
I'm taking
40.
Mark Stoops with my first round pick. There you go. Take okay. that.
It's outside the box. Well, the only
Dan
problem there.
Drink free in Lexington. That's it, pretty much yeah. it.
I don't know whether the let's go recruit Ohio and Michigan strategy is going to fly in Alabama.
No, we got good 3-star from Lorien, Ohio. Yeah, no.
yeah.
Go ahead, Pat. We're not going to snake draft this. I will concede because okay. you're so ornery about this thing. I'll let you get the first pick again.
Good. Good. All right. I'm taking Jimbo next. Some reservation there. I just look. Coach O is a Louisiana product. Coach O's magic is Louisiana. So I just don't. I think you take him out of Louisiana and you get what you got at Mississippi, which was not very good. So now I'm not saying he would flop like that, but I would feel a little more sure taking Jimbo, who has won at Florida State and is I do think will eventually get A&M into the top 10. So I'm taking Jimbo there. It's another guy he's a Saban guy. I mean, he knows how Saban ran things, would probably hew pretty closely to running the same way. So give me Jimbo, round two.
Well, I mean, it would be boring if I picked Coach O here. I have a much, much more exciting candidate for the Alabama job with my second round pick. I'm taking Lane Kiffin.
Damn.
Can you imagine?
Lane Kiffin.
Can you imagine? The spectacle. Can you imagine the migraines Greg Byrne would have every single day? Can you imagine the locks on the sorority house doors and how big they'd have to be? I mean, it would just be the most wondrous moment in the history of college football. Lane Kiffin rolled into Tuscaloosa and they'd win because it's hard to screw that job up. And Lane is a gifted play caller. Yeah, I am taking Lane Kiffin as the next head coach at Alabama.
After being fired train. By the current head coach at Alabama.
Which is just, you know, it's all for the story. Can you imagine the SEC network doing like one of those like over romanticized documentaries? The dark days before the Washington game. Lane was distracted and showed up late to meetings. But it's a redemption tale, Pat. Everyone can grow. Everyone
oh, there learn. You go. We need more redemption tales.
Joey Freshwater returns to the bar scene. Tuscaloosa.
Yeah.
The Lane train would be fun. And he really, I mean, you can't screw up the Alabama job. It's a lot like if you got to be the head coach of USC. How the hell could you lose there, right?
Mm-hmm. He's learned, Dan. He's learned.
which tarmac in the South this lane does the Lane train get derailed? That's what I want to know. All right. Lane Kiffin. I wanted to pick him. I'm a little bitter. That's all right. Me and Coach O. I don't care.
There you go. Gotta
I don't
roll
care. Last time, where did Alabama do? They went and got the LSU old coach, Nick Saban.
That's true.
Yep. Now we get Coach O. Bring him in.
We coming. Roll Tide.
I don't know. I'm with Pat. You take him out of that job, the voodoo's going to wear off, and he's going to turn into a frog or something.
No, take the gator out of the swamp. It don't work. But Coach O, let me put it this way. If we're going to take a discarded USC coaches, I'm taking Coach O over the Lane train. That's it.
So,
all right.
I wanted to pick Mike Leach.
Well, you had a chance.
Like I was but trying to didn't. Think of what would be a bigger spectacle, Lane or Mike. And I landed on Lane somewhat with his familiarity there. But like Mike Leach there would be like beyond. Like Mike Leach has never worked at a have. He has only worked at have-nots. Mike Leach is the single best bad job coach in modern college football history. And that is an inarguable point. There's been a better bad job coach of this generation.
We don't need a soliloquy about your decision-making. This isn't a 30 for 30 on the why you picked.
So I just had to be fascinating. That's all. I thought we were only doing five.
No, we're doing all of them.
Oh, we're doing all of them.
Are we? Yeah.
Oh, geez. I just stepping on
Pat's toes. Them.
Yeah.
Matt, you picking Mike Leach?
Okay, no, I'm not taking Mike Leach. I'm taking the only guy in the league who has beaten Nick Saban 3 times. And if you're saying that he'll go, and if Alabama people can stand to have the Auburn coach, you go get Gus Malzahn. Beat him this last time. Beat him in, 2018? Or was it 2017? Beating him 3 times, I believe, head-to-head. I will take the Gus bus.
There are 3 Waffle Houses in Tuscaloosa. So I think that would work.
Get it done.
So I could take Leach. could take Jeremy Pruitt, could take my man Sam Pittman, Derek Mason, and or Eli Drinkwitz. I do love Pittman, but he hasn't actually won a game yet. Derek Mason had a moment or two, but that's not so much. Pruitt, the Pruitt experience, I don't know. I'm still mad at Eli for not capitalizing on the Lake of the Ozarks as a recruiting tool. I guess I'm taking Coach Leach, the pirate. Pirate sails down the, what is it, the Black Warrior River?
Yeah, that's
it. He rise on boat, rise by ship. He really, the press conferences would change dramatically. Would there be a happier person than Cecil Hurt?
Yeah.
Instead of getting yelled at for every question, all of a sudden you could sit there and say, which SEC coach could beat a bear up in a fist fight? Coach Leach.
And get an answer. Yeah.
Yeah. So Mike Leach off the table. Okay. All right. Anybody want these other guys?
So who we have left? Pruitt, Eli, Muschamp, Derek Mason, and man Sam Pittman.
You eliminated Muschamp early.
I did.
Yeah. Collateral.
Scrap. Yeah. Sure, it was like a sandwich pick. In this,
you made out of that OC. List,
I would take Drinkwitz. I think Drinkwitz is a pretty gifted offensive mind. He's recruited well so far. I think we've seen exactly who. Well, I would take Drinkwitz over Pittman, and you know, I would take him over Pruitt. Sorry, Sully.
I'm taking Pruitt. He's an Alabama native. Would mean he'd crawl from the foothills of Northeast Alabama to Tuscaloosa for that job. And I hate to tell you that, Sully, but he would leave your Vols high and dry to come take that job. I don't think he'd be very good in that job, but everybody should at least be pretty good in that job. And who knows, maybe we have prejudged young Coach Pruitt, and he is just going to hit his stride and flower, and the Vols are going to become a power, and he will establish himself amongst the hierarchy of coaches out there.
Well, I would take Derek Mason, I guess. I mean, that loss in the Texas Bowl in 2018 was enough to be pretty excited. it's hard to judge anyone at Vanderbilt. It really is. I mean,
it is.
His best years, he had 2 6-6 seasons. I went 6-7, lost the bowl games. It's tough. And then Pittman, I don't know. I like Pittman. We'll see.
The AD at Vanderbilt didn't fire Mason, but fired the fairly successful basketball coach. That was the most baffling SEC thing of all time to me. Like
he didn't last.
Let's
very
ride
long
out the mediocre football coach. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But he did turn his office into a nightclub, basically. Like
why did they
fire
Bryce Drew? I didn't understand that. What was that?
I don't know.
It's one year. I didn't understand any of that.
Yeah, he went 0-18 in the league. It's never good to lose a lot, but yeah. Yeah, but it was he had that Garland guy get hurt. But yeah, that was weird. It was weird. And then we're gonna stick with Derek.
All right, let's do quickly win totals. Over under. Vanderbilt, 3 wins. Can they do it? They get the Mercer Bears coming in. There's one, maybe. Can they win 3 at K State, and they're playing Colorado State visiting.
And Louisiana they got La Tech late. Also. Yeah.
Vandy fans listen, so
I'm going to say they win 4. They don't win 3. They don't win 2. They're going to win 4. They'll take 3 of the 4 non-conference, and they'll skeech out one somewhere else, whether it's Ole Miss or South Carolina, something like that. Get to 4. I'm never buying the hype from Derek Mason again, though. His bluster at last year's SEC Media Days was so over the top about how good they were going to be. But I thought, man, you can't talk that much and not be good. And then they went 3-9. So they get the over, but they don't win more than 4.
See, that's why I skipped Media Days. I didn't want to hear that bluster and rhetoric. They're going under 3. Louisiana Tech's a better program than they are right now. Colorado State is rebuilding and they stink. I don't see it, man. I think it will be a test of their billion-dollar endowment worth the pandemic, whether to fire Derek or not.
And they lose that home field advantage if the crowd isn't, if you only can get 20,000.
Yeah.
No, they're the SEC team most prepared to play in front of 20,000 fans.
Yes, exactly. Then
I'll go under. All right. Arkansas Fighting Pittmans get 3.5. Their non-conference is Monroe, Charleston Southern, Notre Dame, and Nevada.
3.5 is the number?
Yeah. Don't jump with too much excitement about this Razorback season. This is why we need Coach Paterno back. Paterno, yeah. Whatever.
Paterno. Paterno. Under. Terrible program in terrible shape right now. And they're not going to win a conference game because they're in the SEC West. So, no, under.
Definitely taking the under. I mean, that what a mishmash, weird combination of coaches. You got Pittman overmatched. You got Kendall Briles, who keeps getting coaches fired as the OC. I am not a believer in that Arkansas ship right now.
How do you say he's overmatched? He hasn't coached one game yet.
He's
even the spring game.
Yes. I
will not let Sam Pittman be desecrated on this. Missouri, 5 wins, over under. They get Central Arkansas, Eastern Michigan.
They got
Louisiana.
Louisiana and BYU. They're at BYU.
Oh, BYU.
Going to squeak out the over, and they're going to get 6 and go to, you know, the Weed Eater Bowl. Drinkwitz, they will just be a better coached offensive team. I don't think they're going to be a very good team. They've got questions at quarterback. Sean Robinson, transfer from TCU, probably needs to step in and be good. Offensive line has to be rebuilt for the most part. Wide receivers rebuilt. But I think they get better coaching, and the schedule, as usual, is pretty gettable. So they get 6. Take the over.
They should start 4-0. They'll certainly be favored in the first 4 games to start. So I got a feeling they can slog their way to 6, probably beating Arkansas in the last game. Louisiana's a salty little November game. That is not your typical SEC late season cupcake.
No,
but
that's true.
Yeah, I think it would be interesting because I believe Drinkwitz beat Napier twice in the Sun Belt last year, both in the regular season and the conference title game, if I'm right.
I'll take over to Ole Miss, 5.5, the Lane train. They're playing Baylor, Southeast Missouri. UConn is coming to Oxford, a good regional rivalry. Georgia Southern.
5.5 is the number. Or no, yeah.
Five and a half.
Baylor's gettable in that first game if they have it in Houston, Pandemic Central. Southeast Missouri, they can win. 2-3, 3-3, 3-4, 4-4, 4-5, 5-5, 6-5. And then we see if Elijah Moore scores the winning touchdown without pretending to urinate in the Egg Bowl. They are going to have the over. They're going to have 6.
Boy, that is a soft schedule. You know, I'm gonna take the under. As much as I love saying John Reese Plumlee, I feel like this is where the recruiting years when they were under these sanctions started to atrophy. And I feel like, especially defensively, they're just not going to have high-end SEC-level athletes in depth. So I feel like it's a bit of a struggle for the Lane train early on.
And I'm taking over. I think this is easy. I think they beat Baylor. I think they beat Southeast Missouri. They beat Vandy, UConn, Arkansas, and Georgia Southern. And they're at 6 without even getting to the Egg Bowl. So that's what I'm taking. South Carolina, 5.5.
Yeah, they play Clemson.
Coastal and then East Carolina, both at home in Columbia. And then obviously Wofford. They're at Clemson late. And yeah, Wofford's their appetizer.
So they're going to go 3-1 non-con, probably. Not much traction in the SEC. I'll take the under there. Ryan Helinski, a lot of talented quarterback, played really pretty well for them. But they're losing a lot of other stuff. Both lines need some work. The wide receiver core needs a little bit of work. So I say they win 5 at best. And Will Muschamp is gone.
Yeah, as much as you guys know, I hate to agree with Pat. I think under's the play here. Save us, Mike Bobo is kind of their rallying cry this year. The 42nd different offense coordinator Will Muschamp's had in his 7 or 8 year career as a head coach. Yeah, I do think Helinski's talented. They'll miss Javon Kinlaw. Boy, he was like a generational player for South Carolina on that defensive line, and I don't see it.
I'll go under. Mississippi State, 6.5. Miss State, non-con is New Mexico at home at NC State. They get Tulane at home and Alabama A&M.
I'm not seeing 6.5. Total scheme change. Leach won't even mind if he has to burn it down for a year and rebuild it. They do get KJ Costello as the transfer quarterback, which, you know, gives you a little bit of hope that maybe you can plug in and play a totally different way. But I say it takes another year before they really kind of get into what Leach wants to do after what Joe Moorhead wanted to do. And they are not winning 6.5.
I think the big variable with them is like how the players connect with Leach, because there was clearly some disconnect in the spring after that horrible tweet with the noose in it. Mike Leach's offense is predicated on rhythm and timing, and so they will not have much rhythm and timing, but they do have good skill. I mean, these are the later years of Mullen's recruiting when things went as well as they ever have there. So I think, look, Leach is nothing if not a winner and a consistent winner, and I think Leach just kind of figures it out, and I think they hit the over.
You know, they're at Kentucky. I don't know. God, this is a tough one. I would not bet this. I guess I'm going to say they're going to beat Ole Miss, so I'd maybe get them to 7. At Arkansas, they'd have to beat Missouri or Ole Miss, in my opinion, to get there. I think. Or maybe they got to beat them both. I don't know. Anyway, who knows? I can't remember now. I'm on to Kentucky. I'll take the over. Kentucky, 7 wins, over under. They're playing Eastern Michigan, Kent State, Eastern Illinois. Oh, Louisville. They got to play Louisville. Yeah, at Louisville. 7 wins.
Boy, tough. They're going to be 5-2, I think, going into the back part of the schedule. There's some toss-up games, I think, in there. 3 of the last 5 are on the road. Let's say you do not win all of those. You drop at least one. But no, sorry, they're going to get to 8, I think. I'll give Kentucky 8 and give them the over.
Okay, 8.
I'll give them that, too. I think Kentucky's defense underappreciated. It could be as good as it was 2 seasons ago when they obviously had the high-end NFL picks and really had that historic season for Kentucky. So I will take the over on the Wildcats.
Tennessee, 7.5. Sully taking the over, of course. Charlotte 49ers at the OU Sooners. Furman's arriving. And I don't know who they're beating up at the end. Who they got here? Troy. Oh, boy. Pat's favorite team. Relegated.
Not relegated yet. I will take the under. I feel like I think Tennessee obviously finished strong last year. They bring back a good offensive line. I don't think there's enough stable quarterback play for them to navigate this stretch and get to 8. So I will take the under. I think they're clearly behind Kentucky, and they will get blown out at Oklahoma.
I will say they get the over, they win 8, and Sully, make sure Vol Twitter, you know, the Jackals over there find out about that I'm actually taking the over with the Vols. It may come down where I'm like boxing myself in, like the winner of Kentucky-Tennessee may get to 8 and the other one's at 7, but I'll say the Vols get there to 8.
Literally, Kentucky just determines the all of these bets. Kentucky's any good, they're all under.
Yeah, right.
Game is in Knoxville. Maybe I think I already picked Kentucky over, which meant I gave him I don't know. Tennessee over. I'll take him. I'm going to be positive. All my teams are over, so they all like me. All right, Auburn 8.5. The non-conference for the Auburn Tigers, Alcorn State. They play North Carolina, Southern Miss, and UMass making an appearance down there. That should be a real barn burner. Hope UMass is taking all the money.
You're on an empty campus all year. You're getting pummeled as UMass usually does. And then hopefully if we have a season, oh, by the way, on November 14th, you get to go to Auburn just to get your face kicked in. Yeah. Big time ball, baby.
Good times. Hey, glad we're doing it.
You know what? They deserve it after what they did last year late in the season at Northwestern. Don't remind me.
Emotionally scarred Pat 40.
Mm-hmm.
Waffle House get to 9?
No. Auburn, they may be at 7, I think. Tough schedule. Watch out for North Carolina September 12th. They've got too many tough games in there. They may not get past 7 wins. So typical Gus, you know, you start getting a little hope last year. You beat Alabama. No, back down the other way.
Every time that Arkansas job opens, he has a bad year for not taking it. So I'm taking the under.
I'm taking over on the Gus bus. I don't know. I'm not as big of a believer in North Carolina when you really dial in on how much they've lost. They have the good young quarterback and Mac Brown. And I feel like sometimes like how teams are doing in recruiting in the offseason like changes people's perception of them. So, I mean, look, I think Auburn's going to beat Alcorn. I think they'll beat Carolina. I think they'll win at Ole Miss. I think they'll beat Southern Miss. And I still think they're better than Kentucky. So at that point, you can find 4 wins because one's UMass, too, and you got Arkansas.
All right, LSU at 9 wins. They're playing San Antonio, playing the Longhorns are coming to Baton Rouge. They get Rice in Houston, and they play Nichols at home.
I think Nichols takes them out. No. Yeah, they're going to win 10, I think. They'll lose at Florida, they'll lose to Alabama, and they win the rest, I think. I think that's a 10-2 team. May the 9-3, I do think A&M, I think, all right, all comes down to the last game against Texas A&M. They're going to be sitting there 9-2 when they go to College Station. I do think A&M's due for a good year, so maybe they just push that number. If the number's 9, I'll take a push on LSU.
It's fascinating referendum on Ed Orgeron without Joe Burrow, and a lot of skill and talent gone on both sides of the ball. Historic losses. His record against, you know, top 10 opponents has been ridiculous. All that said, I do think that they will struggle a little bit without Burrow. So I'm going to take the push on LSU.
I'm taking the over. They are doing tremendous in the Fauci Cup standings. If they'll have herd immunity before UTSA even shows up. So I'm taking that. All right. So as Pat mentioned, that A&M LSU game is the big one at the end. Obviously, we had guys getting punched in a pacemaker and stuff like that in the past. But Vegas seems to be favoring A&M here. A&M's at 9.5 wins. So there's your half win. Texas A&M plays Abilene Christian, North Texas, Colorado, and Fresno.
Yep, and all of them at home. So I think this is set up for A&M. They have no excuses this year. You win 10, or you ask why you pay Jimbo Fisher $75 million. So they get to 10. They're 10-2, maybe even 11-1, but they don't beat Bama.
Yeah, I think I got to take the over here. They obviously have experience back at quarterback. They're much more talented on defense than they've been. They let Mike Elko hire an extra assistant coach to help them with scheme some. I think it's all set up and teed up for this year. I mean, they're trading like Clemson for Colorado on the schedule. So, yeah, like, I mean, their first big test is at Auburn on October 17th. So, and Jimbo Fisher still knows how to call plays. He has somewhat been like napping at the end of Florida State and then at A&M. But I think this is about as easy of an SEC schedule as you can possibly conjure up until late November.
Yeah, absolutely. This is it. Dream season for A&M. Third year he's there. I mean, at Auburn is it. I mean, at Mississippi State. That's at South Carolina. They should be 10-0 going into the Bama game. So I'm obviously going to take them, and then I don't know what LSU brings to the table at the end. So I think that's a pretty nice little bet. All right, we got Georgia getting 10 wins. Georgia's non-conference, Virginia in Atlanta, Eastern Tennessee, the Monroe shows up, and Georgia Tech, of course, at the end at home.
Boy, who wins the cocktail party game? That's your swing game there, because Florida's an over-under of 10 as well. I'm going to take the Bulldogs there. I know I've made a case for Mullen catching up with them, and I think they're closing, but I still think I'd give Georgia the edge. So Georgia is 11-1 with the loss at Alabama. And even then, think about this. That 101,000 at Bryant-Denny on September 19th, not going to be 101,000. How tough is it going to be? We'll see. But they might even be able to sneak that one out. So Georgia over.
Taking Georgia under. I am not a believer in Jamie Newman, the quarterback. We obviously don't know if JT Daniels gets immediate eligibility, although the NCAA is handing out immediate eligibility like they're, comedy flyers in Times Square these days. So, I just think new OC needed change at OC, but I think the lack of high-end talent at receiver still scares me there. And, I think Georgia takes a step back this year.
I'm going to pick Florida in this game at the cocktail party, so I'm going to take them as an under or a push. I don't think they beat Bama and Bama, but that's, man, they got a chance. Those are really the only two games that scare me for Georgia. All right, Florida's also 10, as Pat alluded to. Eastern Washington, South Alabama. Who else we got? New Mexico State.
The Noles.
Oh, yeah, FSU. Yeah, of course. I'm like looking around in there.
10, push, I think.
Don't have to play Alabama. They don't have to play. They got LSU, of course, at home.
They got LSU. They got Georgia. at Florida State, at Tennessee. You have a bad day at either one of those, you might lose that. So even if you beat LSU in the swamp, I think you end up at 10.
I'm going over. Love the defense. Best potential cornerback pairing in the country. Let's grant them be a little funky and creative. I think Mullen and Kyle Trask are kind of a match made in heaven. And, you know, the recruiting momentum from Mullen's filling in, they're going to be more talented. So I think it's a year of the Gator.
Yeah, I like them over. Knowles don't scare me for UF, so I'll take Florida. All right, finally Alabama, and I guess this is it. We'd be deciding Alabama and Florida would be playing in the SEC championship game, according to this, or maybe Georgia. I don't know. I guess that's going to be it. Bama's 10.5 on these 12 games. You got USC in Arlington, Georgia State, Kent State, the alma mater of Nick Saban. And then UT Martin, the Skyhawks, are coming to town in November.
Well, despite the, you know, annual Big Ten deriding of Alabama's schedule, you got USC neutral field. And when you schedule that, it's USC. You've got Georgia coming in. You're at LSU. You've got a good A&M team at the end. And you've got Auburn. That's a pretty good schedule. That said, it's Bama. Over.
Yeah. Bet on Bama. It was like that Super Bowl the Patriots lost, and people think, who do you want? I was like, I'm going to take Tom Brady over Nick Foles every single time. I'm just going to take Saban. I'm going to take Saban until it's obvious. The special bet of the decade will be in that opener against USC, because it's been nobody wins the offseason these days like USC, right? Oh, yeah. They got some transfers. Oh, they got this. Do you never, ever, ever bet against Saban in openers?
No.
Ever.
Never. Never.
So no, I'm all team Saban until proven differently.
Yeah, 10.5. If they ain't 12-0, they're 11-1. But I think they're 12-0. I think this is your there's Bama. I don't think this lines up as bad. We'll see what happens in Atlanta on December 5th or December 12th or whenever they might play it. Of course, all of this is predicated on us actually having a season. All right, this podcast is droned on and on because this is the SEC and there's just more to discuss. It just means more. So thank you for listening. Give us a nice rating. Subscribe to this podcast. Tell your friends about this podcast. Listenership is booming, and we are ready for the 2020 season, even if the 2020 season may or may not be ready for us. Talk to you all next time.
I'm Mike Lizikoff, Chief Investigative Correspondent for Yahoo News.
And I'm Dan Kleidman, Editor-in-Chief of Yahoo News.
We're the hosts of Skullduggery, a podcast that not only breaks down the news, but also breaks news.
We deliver authoritative analysis while drawing intriguing historical parallels from our decades of covering D.C. scandals.
With our current focus on the president and his administration's handling of the coronavirus, to the 2020 elections, we interview those helping to shape the stories.
So subscribe to and download Skullduggery wherever you listen to your podcasts, and be sure to follow us on social media at Skullduggery Pod.